Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification.
Nice.
The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. You should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the Event Horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the Event Horizon, where the impossible happens. Join us each week at this time as we delve into the worlds of science fiction, fantasy, and science fact in all their forms. I am your host, Gene Turnbow.
And I am your other host, Susan Fox.
And with us is Rem Alternis, which is an interesting stage name.
Welcome
Thank
you,
to the
yeah.
show. And we're here to talk about the latest Kevin Anderson project. Kevin Anderson and
Jeffrey Morris.
Yeah, Jeffrey Morris, who we just talked to, I think 3 weeks ago he was on the air with us.
Lovely man.
And
yes, he's very talented.
And it's all about Persephone, the novelization of the script that Kevin J. Anderson has written and is peddling to Hollywood.
So let's hear the Kickstarter video audio.
Which explains it really, really well.
Better than me.
Insert audio here.
I love the notes.
2 minutes later. Okay. And we're back. So this is really well organized. I mean, this is, if you're going to do intellectual property for science fiction, this is how you do it, man. Kevin J. Anderson is the master at this.
Well, he's seen it from both sides, hasn't he? He's written, you know, new books, but he's also adapted other people's work.
Hang on a sec. I've got to pause this. Okay, let's see. Where were we? Oh, yes, Kevin Anderson, really good at building intellectual property and doing the whole setup for making all of this successful. There are a lot of artists out there and a lot of writers who are really, really talented, who just have not got clue one as to how to make that jump.
And sometimes they consult outside, well, consultants.
Uh-huh. Which is, I think, where you come in. That was Susan giving you the lead in.
The intro?
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to be here. I've met Kevin at several conventions for gaming. He brings his books. He and Rebecca come and sell those books, and it's a chance to meet your favorite writers and stuff like that. So he and I got to meet that way, and I told him what I do. My production company, Rem Alternis Productions, we do Kickstarter and marketing management. And so he's been running Kickstarters on his own, and he's like, ideally, I want someone to do this for me so I don't have to. So I actually, I told him, I was like, listen, I'll do the first one for free for you, 'cause I just want to show you, you want us.
Wow. That was a heck of a deal.
That was
a heck of a deal.
That's not an offer everybody gets, I'll bet.
No,
I mean,
I
when it's
no.
One of the most prolific science fiction writers that's impacted the worlds we all love, it was worth it. Absolutely.
Kevin J. Anderson outputs an astonishing number of books a year.
Yep.
I used to like between 4 and 6 books a year, and I have no idea how anybody does that without their brainstems just burning out.
Well, he stays off of
social media for one thing.
Yeah, I was about to say, that is a time eater.
Yeah, and that's... go ahead.
I remember hearing about his process. He lives in the mountains of Colorado, and he goes hiking constantly and dictates all of his ideas. So by the time he finishes a walk, he's got most of the plot of a book set up that he can then just, you know, type in and send off to the editors.
Yeah, I think Bigfoot is dictating to him.
Yeah, he talked to us about that the last time he was on the air. We've had him on about I don't know, three or four times.
Yeah, he's
the last awesome. Time we had him on was the Dragon Business.
Yeah.
I backed that Kickstarter.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, we contributed very well.
We contributed to that, and we've contributed to Persephone as well.
Awesome. That's great to hear. Thank you.
So we have a rare opportunity to talk to somebody who actually, I mean, this is the thing, you know, creators create, but they really suck at marketing generally, you know, because it's not their skill set. And in order to be able to continue to create, they have to be really good at it. And well, it almost never happens.
Well, how many couples do you know where one spouse is like the artist, the musician, the painter, whatever, and the other spouse is the marketing genius and you know, hard and, uh-huh. you know,
oh, yeah.
dealing.
Like fan base press? That's,
oh, there you go.
Yeah, Dylan and Bryant and...
Barbara Dillon.
Yeah, Bryant and Barbara Dillon, who run Fan Base Press, which is, they started like, I don't know, 10 years ago, working out of their apartment, you know, and he was like walking dogs, and she was, I don't know what she was doing. She was working at a pharmaceutical company or something, and they have built a comic book business
and
basically
from
scratch.
And he writes comics, and she sells them.
Yeah, and they are now a publisher, and they keep getting these Eisner nominations.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are good at what they do. Really good at it. And if it wasn't for Barbara, they would be nowhere.
Bryant would still be walking dogs.
Yeah, Bryant, yeah.
But for a Bryant without a Barbara, we need you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
steering the discussion back.
I'm happy to play your Barbara anytime you'd like.
Yeah, that's what writers and artists and filmmakers and animators and musicians, that's what they generally lack, is somebody sure. like you that can handle the stuff that they're not good at.
And what kind of stuff is that? Let's talk about what it is you supply to an artist.
What do you
sure.
yeah, what do you do? What's your
so,
daily?
My background is I was a director of operations level for a tech startup. I've done retail management and specialty retail and stuff. So I had the business experience. Of course, I landed in retail because my degree was theater.
Of course.
So, but as I developed those skills and then got more involved in just playing games, being a gamer, and I've always considered myself one of the creatives, but I launched my own first Kickstarter project. And some of the truest advice I got at the time was, you're ready for your first Kickstarter after you've launched and finished your first Kickstarter.
Absolutely
agree.
I can verify that.
There's so much anxiety when it's your pet project, when it's your baby that's out in the world. I had all the work done. I had the backer updates ready to go. And for whatever reason, as soon as I hit that launch button, I just went catatonic. I could not do anything but click the refresh button on Kickstarter and watch the numbers go up. My anxiety was so bad that I couldn't do this. And I was like, God, I want to help other people not have to feel that. Let us take care of it so you can focus on the numbers and the growth and mm-hmm. the mental space that it takes to put something like this out in the world. So it kind of started with that. And we've learned, every single project, we learn something new. We get new contacts. We have further reach. We see what works, what doesn't work. My team, we have a marketing committee meeting where the marketing sphere is always changing. And so we will get on a call. We get homework assignments of a different Udemy course or YouTube course or something like that. And then we all learn something different and then come together and share it. So this past week, we actually did a Kickstarter one. It was like beginnings of Kickstarter. I was like, you know what? You go do this and just make sure we're not missing anything real dumb or some little quick tips or anything like that. And 90% of it we had down and they said it the exact same way we do. There's certain times of year that are not good to run a Kickstarter. There's certain days of the week you shouldn't launch a Kickstarter. There's all of these little secrets of the trade that you start to piece together through your own research or experience. And so being able to share that with creators that are trying some of this for the first time is super important. A big one is that project followers leading up to a Kickstarter, it's crucial to have enough that you're going to fund at least 50% of your Kickstarter on day one and two.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've had people that are like, I want to raise $100,000 and I have 150 project followers. And I'm like, please do not launch. Please do not launch.
Yeah, yeah. We ran Kickstarters for our animated web series, Mighty Aphrodite.
Ooh.
And that funded, we had enough project followers before we launched that we were able to fund each of those in about 24 hours.
Yeah. Great. On the other hand, another Kickstarter, we could not have predicted the storm, the great storms on the East Coast that knocked out everybody's ability to contribute to us rather than to contribute to life-saving charities.
And that one fell flat on its face.
Entirely fair. So yeah, it's the Kickstarter setup. We advise on, we create graphics, we advise on the content, we research similar Kickstarters to see what worked well or didn't work well for those. We went to, we do budget sheets to make sure that we know exactly at what point they turn profitable.
Mm-hmm.
We advise on rewards and stretch goals. One of the tips and tricks is that you don't really want more than 5 or 6 rewards because it gets overwhelming and people walk away from that.
Yeah, they can't figure it out. You know, I have to actually push page down to read this. Next.
Right. I'm scrolling too long. It's too many choices. It's too hard. So one of the things that with Kevin's project that we were able to help with and advise on is, you know, we talked about the dragon business. I backed that one, but I had a difficult time choosing because I thought it was cool that you could get 12 mystery books off of Kevin's own shelves. And so I wanted that. But that has nothing to do with the dragon business.
Right.
So to me, that's more of an add-on where I'll get the dragon business, but I also would get that as an add-on, which is just continuing the profit chain.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between rewards or add-ons is important to differentiate. Having stretch goals, I think Kevin was very smart about his for Persephone in that sometimes if you set stretch goals too early because you don't know how a project's going to do, let's say that you have a stretch goal at $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, and $20,000, and you hit $20,000 in the first 5 hours of the Kickstarter. Well, now you're committed to all this stuff that...
Yeah, that, and then you have to come up with more.
Right, right. Yeah. It was supposed to help boost you to the next level, and you just blew past those levels. So we kind of waited for the Kickstarter to slow after the first 2 to 3 days and then announced what those tiers were going to be and at what levels. So that's kind of helped push it close. We're at over 27,000 now. So $30,000 is the next Kickstarter or the next stretch goal.
That's pretty awesome. The initial goal was something like $5,500 or something.
Yeah. $5,000. And it was really important, you know, as to us as a company, and saying like, yeah, Kevin, you want to come to us. So we've been comparing to his other projects. So we blew past in the first 24 hours, the total amount of backers, the total amount of funds raised in the first days for his previous ones.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin has a remarkable following on his own. So we really wanted to be able to take this and reach new people that aren't following his page mm-hmm. or that like his works, but may not necessarily know they like his works. They know they like the Dune movie, but they don't mm-hmm. know that
he has anything to do with Brian Herbert.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So we're helping to advertise, spread the word, do interviews, talk about it everywhere we can. Because one of the other hints about Kickstarter is the first 3 days and the last 3 days are where you spike. The rest of it is a hard grind to get it to go up at all.
Yeah. So it's like the doldrums.
Yeah, exactly. So this is that middle point where we want to do and partner and promote as far and wide as we can so that we can keep moving that needle up before the end of the campaign.
And I think it might have something to do with the fact that when you go to social media to talk about something, you know, to draw attention to your project or whatever it is, you have to have an event to talk about. You can't just... Saying we are here and this is going is not enough. Nobody cares.
That's what your perks are for. That's what your stretch goals are for. New stretch goal. You can be a sleeping colonist for Persephone.
New stretch goal. You can touch your toes. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, something like that so that you have something to talk about. But generally... I mean, this is the problem that we have for our Patreon campaign. We Patreon, sci-fi.radio abides. That's not news.
Right. Well, and I think it's knowing which of your audiences you're talking to when. Uh-huh. So what Kevin posts on his Facebook page to his followers that had followed him and have the context of who he is versus running an ad that someone's who's never heard of him before. Mm-hmm. What did they want to see? We're selling Persephone to them, whereas his audience were more of selling him to them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that balance. So something I might do an ad for a goal for Kevin where he's going to get live with any backers. Mm-hmm. And you get an exclusive interview with him or a Q&A or whatever from him versus Persephone, where it might be like, hey, if you like sci-fi, space exploration, stuff like that, this is a film in development and you can support it from the very beginning.
It's a pretty neat concept, too. I mean, I've always wondered, Alpha Centauri is so close compared to every other star in our neighborhood in the galaxy.
Well, that's why they call it Proxima, because it is approximate.
Well, yes. And wouldn't it be cool if someday we could go there? And what would that be like? And what would we find when we got there?
Yeah, if we don't find anything good, though?
Yeah, that's the thing. Well, we've just spent the last 50 years of our lives in cold sleep and thrown away our lives on Earth because of the time dilation aspect. And we get here, and the planet we thought that had a solid surface kind of doesn't. Yep. And we're screwed.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of fear that comes with it. But I think that's some of the excitement, too, of that travel and the unknown and what are you going to find or discover. And I think that, with Kevin's track record in science fiction, it's really interesting to see what his take is going to be on, Proxima B, which is the closest viable planet to support life that we've discovered. So what could that look like? And how do we prepare before we get there? And what happens if our preparations didn't go through the way that we had hoped?
Does Proxima B actually have a surface that you can stand on?
Yeah, I mean, actually discovered this planet? Let's start there.
So Proxima B, my understanding of this is that Proxima B is part of the Alpha Centauri solar system. And based on, telescopes and all of the wonderful astronomers' work that I cannot speak to at all.
Right.
That theoretically, as whatever their comparisons and their metrics are, is potentially the closest similarity to what Earth has that could potentially be sustainable. So maybe some of those are, does it have an atmosphere? Does it produce oxygen? Like things like that, where some of those boxes are ticked. I'm sure there's not all of the boxes are ticked, but whatever research they're able to do, it's been the closest one to potentially support life.
Okay, I didn't mean to ask you a science question, really, but this is the second time today I've seen science fiction involving Proxima B. I'm going, is that a thing? Is this a real thing? Yeah, apparently it is. Okay.
Maybe. My expertise, I could be totally making all of this up from hearsay, but for some reason, that's what my brain is telling me.
There's two stars there. There's Alpha Centauri and Proxima Centauri. So, and Proxima would be the smaller one.
Yeah.
And after that, I don't know anything about them. I don't remember my astronomy.
Well, apparently it's got planets, and it's close enough that we can see them pretty well.
Yeah.
Now, maybe 10 years ago, we couldn't.
Which implies that there's a Proxima A, a planet closer into Proxima than this one.
Yeah, but it's probably a burning cinder. And if there's a Proxima C, it may not be.
A little bit of an ash going around in a circle, like Mercury or something.
Not a golden spot.
So the speed at which this Kickstarter funded is just astounding.
Yeah,
it's the value of a big name.
Yeah, we were very proud of it. And this is a Kickstarter that's promoted by both Jeffrey Morris and Kevin J. Anderson. So you get two people like that really just are fans of the genre themselves, in addition to being major contributors. And the fact that the two of them even met through their mutual space contacts You know, I love that. That's kind of their story of how they, how'd you meet? Oh, my friend at NASA introduced me to,
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
to a film guy. And we, now we're creating together. And I think that's really cool.
Well, and Jeffrey Morris got into it because he, you know, he's
you're a NASA
kind of
a family, right?
Yeah. He's a space fanboy himself. He's yep. working on that, documentary about the Eagle from Space 1999.
The Eagle has landed. Yep.
Yeah. The Eagle has landed. And that's what we spoke with him about. And, so I mean, the science fiction community is so small and so tight, and yet we're scattered all over the world. You know, it's like,
what the internet's for.
It's an amazing connectivity, and it's really cool that they were able to collide with each other in this sea of information.
Yeah, well, and meeting Kevin and starting to work on this project, Jeffrey was about 2 weeks away from launching his Kickstarter, so he pulled us in to help further the message for that as well. So I got to work on that.
Okay. So yeah,
how's that going?
So very high goal for Kickstarter. So we kind of understood that going in, but we got a ton of backers and fans that are still invested and helping mm-hmm. in the next steps of the process. So Jeffrey's, I believe, going with some venture capitalists, but there are going to be additional opportunities to engage with those backers and bring them into creating The Eagle Has Landed and making it come alive.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
So how long have you been in the mix? How long have you been doing this for other creative projects in fandom?
Gosh, probably my first project was in 2019, I want to mm-hmm. say. And so my focus for the first year or two was that we did a couple of small Kickstarters for a steampunk fantasy comic book. And there's a gaming publisher that is run by a friend of mine that's a brand new company, Fragging Unicorns Games. And so we've partnered with them on a couple of gaming Kickstarters.
I love the name of the company.
It's so great. They're wonderful. So I've gotten to kind of get some of that experience and practice by just helping them and partnering with them. And then as we began to grow, you know, I helped Catalyst Game Labs with their Kickstarters. That's how I ended up getting involved with them and eventually becoming their community and marketing person. So while I do community and marketing for them, I'm also, my company does their Kickstarters. And so I'm kind of, I have a hand in each court there to make sure that things are being managed the way they want to see it managed. So yeah, it's grown from there. You know, the CEO of Catalyst knew Kevin as mm-hmm. well. So I had met Kevin once before, but we kind of got to get together again because of Lauren. So we were able to connect. There's some other gaming companies that I've gotten to start contracting with or at least have some conversations with. One of my clients is Rollicrit, which is the Gen Con merchandise vendor.
Oh, I think I've heard of them.
And they just did a bag of holding Kickstarter that raised over $1 million.
That's where I've heard of them. I think my son has one of their bags.
Oh, neat. Yeah, they used to be from ThinkGeek, but they kind mm-hmm. of would fall apart.
Uh-huh.
And so this is a reimagining that's a much sturdier version of them.
He loves it.
Yeah, he loves
it. Awesome. Yeah, I'm excited. This one's very customizable, so you can get straps that have like D20s on them or, you know, whatever your preferred gaming thing is. Another marketing contact client of ours is Rift Zone Contact. Mm-hmm. And I heard about this one because I'm potentially negotiating with Beetle and Grimms, which is Matthew Lillard's gaming company. They're going to be running a Kickstarter soon, but one of their people is involved in another gaming company, which is called Boosted Reality Inc. And they are doing a miniatures war game that's got the complexity of like Warhammer or mm-hmm. BattleTech, but all of their pieces have an RFID tag in them. So you can actually play via your phone. So there's not the learning curve. So, you know, if you've never played a difficult wargaming tabletop experience like that before, you can still get on an app and start playing now because it knows how far the pieces are, it knows what they can do, and you can just push the attack button and choose a weapon.
That's wow. Awesome. That's an incredible concept.
Yeah, that's a cool one.
Either for little kids or moms, I'm not sure which. Probably both.
Yeah.
I'm just blown away by how big I had My focus has been pretty much on the creator side of things and the whole Kickstarter setting things up and making it go from a production and financing standpoint. I had no idea the universe was as big as this.
Yeah.
You are painting a very elaborate panorama here.
Well, it's there's different companies need different things. Like Catalyst, BattleTech would be successful even without Kickstarter. It's more of a marketing tool to reach more people.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of companies, you know, this Rift Zone Contact, this is their first ever project, and it doesn't happen unless they get the funding.
Right.
So
right,
a lot of them is this is how they stand up and discover whether or not they're going to be viable and able to survive. And so it's really cool to be able to help them on their journey. And gamers are just so excited in general and passionate about what they do. Just like sci-fi enthusiasts that, you know, part of...
And there's a huge overlap, of course.
Yeah. And part of what excites me is being able to help other people fulfill their dreams too. So,
and that is really essential. What you are doing is helping drive the next generation of the biggest creators that drive our popular culture.
Yeah, so we sure hope so. You know, it's we can't wait to see the implications of this with our clients, our future Kickstarters, our future marketing contacts. But we love what we do, and we're excited to be part of it. You know, it's an honor to be working with Kevin J. Anderson. You know, whether or not he chooses to continue with us in the future, you know, it's really cool to be able to promote his product, his work, and, you know, have the notch on my belt that says, like, man, I got to do that experience. I got to help a prolific science fiction writer with one of his projects. And that's so cool.
It is really pretty amazing stuff. We are talking with Rem Alternis of Rem Alternis. Is it Productions or Incorporated or?
Rem Alternis Productions Incorporated.
Oh, it's both of them. Okay. I win. I totally win. I totally won that one. And we have been talking about the behind-the-scenes work on the Kickstarter for Kevin J. Anderson and
Jeffrey Morris's
Persephone, an epic science fiction story of human survival. You know, okay. Yeah,
and about sci-fi fandom to professional marketing in general.
Yeah, and we have been very, very happy to have you on the show because you have shown us a part of how all of this stuff works that most people never get to see. And we thank you very much for appearing on the show.
Thank you guys very much. And thank, if I may, thank you all for listening. The best way to support artists and help them make their dreams come true is to support these Kickstarters. So please back Persephone.
We did.
Yeah, we actually did.
Thank you.
You have been listening to episode 266 of Sci-Fi.Radio's production of The Event Horizon for November 4th, 2023. Our guest this evening has been Rem Alternis of Rem Alternis Productions and the publicist for the new book by Jeffrey Morris and Kevin J. Anderson entitled Persephone. It is the novelization of Anderson's screenplay about humanity's first trip out to Proxima Centauri and the potential of alien civilization that may spell the end of humankind. The show will air again tomorrow, November 5th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the upcoming Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the airtimes have passed, you will find this episode and others on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi-radio and become a patron of the station. We are almost entirely listener-supported, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, production team, writers, and business operation fees, in addition to helping us procure equipment, music licensing, and other resources we need to stay on the air. We have been broadcasting continuously since 2009, and we are thankful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL is, again, patreon.com/sci-fi-radio. The Event Horizon on sci-fi.radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.